Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Evident Footprints. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. We've got a great show lined up for you. I want to wish everyone who is still celebrating the holiday a very happy Valentine's Day. If you're fortunate enough to be in love with someone besides yourself, then you had a wonderful day, I'm sure. And those of you who have no one, my sympathy goes out to you. Hopefully you found something worthwhile to do anyway. And I'm being a little bit crazy tonight, but that's what happens when you're starting at 1 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast. I want to welcome the many, many listeners new to Evident Footprints, and it's just increasing. The listenership is increasing exponentially. I'm excited about that. The network is very excited about that. Even our guest tonight is excited about that because we may actually get some calls in. I want to encourage you, those of you who are looking at the index, check out the numbers there, any of the numbers under Stream 1 or Stream 2. We can handle, they tell me, at close to 20 calls simultaneously. So if you want to call in and give some comments or ask our guests some questions, you are encouraged to call. Since we have so many numbers, I'll let you read them yourselves. We'll spare that time. I want to give a shout out to Barbara, who is a, she tells me, a frequent listener. She doesn't always get to hear the shows live. She will listen to the archives. So, Barb, if you catch this on the archives, hello. Also, I want to welcome a new listener in Ohio, Kathleen, and the usual group of listeners I have from all over the place, Karen, Bob, and Bill, David Crenshaw, Zachariah, Sheila, and Jill. I'm a poet and don't know it, I guess, and also the general. Hello to John in California, Rick in Denver, and also Kastara in Cottonwood, Arizona, and my newfound friends in the Winter Park, Orlando, Florida area, including Josie, David, Peter, and Maria. Hello to all of you. Hope you all are enjoying the holiday. Our guest tonight is a very, very cultured veteran talk show host. He has his own show on Republic Broadcasting Network. He is known as the Radio Avenger, and also he has a pseudonym he sometimes goes by, and he is also known as the Paul Revere of talk radio. He is a longtime veteran of the Patriot Radio broadcasting venue, and he is also a very spiritual man, and we are going to be talking about both Earth-related issues as well as the spiritual implications that really are the underlying and the real meaning behind what's happening today on planet Earth. With that, I would like to welcome our guest to Evident Footprints, talk show host, Mr. Rick Adams. Rick, good evening.
And good evening to you.
And how are you feeling, having worked just about an hour ago, wrapping up your show?
Oh, I feel just a wee bit tired, but not too badly at this hour. I'm holding up. I'm holding up. Every day is a busy day for me, and today is no different, but I'm happy to be part of your wonderful program tonight, as you know.
Well, thank you. It's nice to have you back. Of course, you were on my show a while back, and there were some crazy things going on back then, and they seem to have gotten quite a bit crazier since that last appearance several months ago. And you have the cream of the crop of talk show guests on your your show, authors, researchers, and this information is for the listening audience, of course. I'm not telling you anything you don't know yourself. But I'm amazed at how well you handle both the subject matter, which is very diverse. I mean, you talk about political issues, you talk about the Constitution, you talk about history, this new world order, and you're able to encapsulate all of that and put it into a biblical or a spiritual context. And I really like that about you, because you present a lot of solutions. Now, yes. whether people are waking up to those solutions or not is one thing, but here on BBS, as I mentioned to you off the air, our listenership is very spiritual-minded and spiritually oriented, and so you are among friends here on this network. I want you to know that from the get-go.
Yes, I do.
You can profess your faith as equally as you can your historical knowledge. So I want to assure you that you can be comfortable in doing so.
Well, that's nice to know. Either way, though, Don, you know, I like going into the lion's den sometimes too, you know, and facing the skeptical, the sort of combative individuals who come at this whole question of how to save our nation and our freedoms from a more humanistic perhaps perspective, if you follow me. So mm-hmm. Either way, I'm pleased to be able to discuss it, and sometimes I even do much more efficaciously, if you will, when I'm pressed against the wall and get more combative. But that's fine with me either way, because I think that is where the whole issue lies. I don't think we can discuss anything anymore without really getting back to the Holy Scriptures that the Christians, of course, worship and read, hopefully, each and every day. And that's where the answer to all of our ills lies, as far as I'm concerned, yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm convinced of that, and I, you know yourself that I listen to as many talk shows as I can. I try to sort of assimilate a broad read, if you want to use that term, on everything, and sort of sort things out for myself. We don't always agree with one another, and yet there seems to be a path that all this information is leading toward, and that is the truth. And I hear that constantly on your show. You are in pursuit of the truth, and if it's not coming out of your guest or out of the callers, it comes out of your mouth. And often, you know, I can hear and feel that anointing in your voice. The anger I've heard a few times. You have gone on, much like I do, and some of all of us really do.
Yeah.
To some extent, it just builds up inside you, and you've got to let it out. And
well, I mean, like everything again goes back to the Scriptures. There's a time for anger as well as a time for being passive, and a time to speak and a time not to speak, you know. So Jesus said in John 8:32, you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. So he is the truth and he will set us free. And free from what, you ask, right? Well, you know darn right well that we in this world today live in darkness, and it's the darkness of the world, the spiritual darkness, that is responsible for the current malaise in our world today, that the Scripture refers to men preferring darkness to light. Isn't that why they would be more apt to vote for a Hillary or a McCain, say, than a Rick Adams or a Don Nikoloff? You bet, given all things as equals, they would rather have someone tickle their fancy and make them feel good about themselves, you know, and believe a lie rather than believe in the truth, don't you think?
Oh, yes. And you know, you mentioned, you know, they want to tickle our fancy and make us feel good.
Right.
I can't see in anything in most of these candidates at all that tickles my fancy or makes me feel good.
Amen to that, Doug.
So, you know, I get your point, and I guess, you know, we have to now move into this area of the mind control and the propaganda and the brainwashing and the dumbing down of the masses that has occurred.
Right.
Now, we don't have that problem on this network. I can tell you that the people are you know, they're spiritually mature, or at least they are open to becoming spiritually mature. But we don't see that mirror our leadership. In fact, our leaders are doing their own thing, much to the chagrin and the detriment of the rest of society. Mm-hmm. Would you agree to that, or?
Oh, absolutely. No question. No doubt about it. You hit the nail on the head.
So we are, and you and I have talked about this in the past, but this is a new show. So we are going, you know, we may repeat something. In fact, it sometimes bears repeating that all these things understood and recognized, that the amount of control that they have over us through the law, and really much of it is mindless. It's just pablum, and it's just ritual that they go through. Sort of marching in time, but marching in place at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Not moving forward, probably moving backwards, if anything.
Yes.
And then the propaganda of the media. Now, we are in the media, and here we're talking about propaganda, but I know I speak with a certain fire or a certain fervor about that. And I don't consider myself really part of the media in that general sense. Now, they call us the alternative media. But my take is that we are actually living what we expect them to be, and which they are not. And that is a mouthpiece for the masses and bearers of light, truth seekers, and bearers of the truth, for that matter. I don't think there's a difference between the light and the truth.
Absolutely not. No, I agree. Sure.
Now, I listened to your show. I'm going to just mention this. I listened to your show tonight. You had Jerome Corsi on as a guest.
Yes.
And you were talking about many of the anomalies that have been occurring in regard to, let's say, like 9/11 and such issues. What is the most pressing issue in your mind that the American people need to come to grips with and address with some finality, if you want to use that term?
Well, do you mean like the political arena, or do you mean beyond that, Don?
Well, you know, I could say 9/11. I could say what they're doing to destroy our economy, or what they're doing to make enemies around the world. We could talk about all those things, and
yeah.
I'm not trying to limit it. But I know that you, there must be a burning passion within you as to what the most pressing issue is. I don't know if that's the New World Order and the fact that that we're trying to awaken the masses about this reality?
I think I can point my finger at it, if you will. Probably the most important thing that I can do in that sense politically is to make people aware of who our real enemies are. And in the context of our own political world, without getting into who controls America and those that run the world system, I would have to say on a more basic and concrete level that people can understand, it's their own government.
Mm-hmm.
That is, the federal government is the biggest enemy that we've had. I've said that all along. And after the War for the Confederacy, you know, in the 1800s, that became evident that the central government won and the sovereignty of the states lost. And that has haunted us ever since, you know, Don.
Mm-hmm.
Today we are not a free nation. We are not a free people. Our states are not sovereign. We talk about the loss of sovereignty of our nation, and yet our states and our cities and our towns have been turned over to this regime, this control by these Washington bureaucrats and judges and dictators, you know, these Stalin wannabes, if you will. And that's what they've done. And always in the name of good, you notice. It's never in the name of some evil ambition. It's always to make us love one another, to make us one nation under the humanist agenda, you know, to bring us all together racially so that we don't have segregation and we don't have to worry about riots based on race. The federal government is there to protect us, to protect little school children who have to be bused, quote unquote, you know, from their home all the way across town. And that now is considered a right rather than extortion on the part of the federal government. So you see, the ends justify the means as far as these federalists, so-called, are concerned. These are the ones who do not believe in the sovereignty of the states and the true concepts of freedom under the Articles of Confederation. They believe in a centralized totalitarian government that is benevolent, you see. It is a good government because it does good things, even though it employs the use of force. So, whether it's seat belts, traffic, you know, control, monitoring of our surveillance and homeland security, they always want to keep us safe and happy. You see, and isn't that basically what it comes down to? Who is the real enemy? It's the enemy that's in control in Washington. In my view, that's where the real battle lines are drawn.
Well, you brought up so many points there. First of all, you know, what is safe and what are they using as the benchmark to safety when you've got these mind-controlled kids going into the school, shooting people up, and they wait several hours to move in and rescue whatever remaining hostages might still be alive. Then... you know, I think in the context of your reference to our history, you know, I grew up in a northern school, and what they taught us about the Civil War is that the North defeated the South. Now, I wonder if in the South they were teaching them that, well, the South decided to just basically lay down their arms and declare peace. You wonder what the spin might have been, that they would keep the nation divided.
Right.
Because we have had a rash of quote unquote Southern presidents for many, many years now, and I think that probably has some relationship to the Virginia Company, one of the secret owners of the United States of America, that very few people know so little about, but it's related to the British Crown. And the obligations that we have to maritime law and this whole concept of you know we're born into slavery, even though they don't teach us that in the schools.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. You're absolutely correct. No doubt about that.
So you know, in your mind, what do you think the reason is? I mean, maybe I hit it on the head. What do you think the reason is that we have had this rash of Southern presidents? And they're pushing for the same thing right now, at least with McCain. Whether it's McCain or Hillary Clinton, I mean, how do you declare where she's from when she was born in Chicago? She lived all this time in Arkansas after having gone to school in New England, and then she ends up in New York, and now she's trying to get into Washington. I mean, you know, there's a lot of zigzagging going around on there. And we seem to agree that the Bilderbergers have chosen her to be the one, although I think there may be some things being revealed that may really shake the tree a little bit and foil their plans.
Well, I agree a little bit, not totally, but somewhat, with Jerry Corsi that as far as McCain, you know, he is going to be a fall guy, I think, setting him up to fall. And he's not going to, at this point, looks like he's not going to be president at all if we have this planned election that we're all supposed to anticipate in November. But I would say that I think... My personal opinion is Yes, Obama can be used in a way that Jimmy Carter was used, you see, to come to power. And on the other hand, very well could be that the deal has already been made, that Hillary Clinton will, in fact, inherit the White House, and this is going from a, you know, from a Bush-Clinton, a Bush-Clinton revolving door policy once again. That could very well be. But, you know, one thing that I've always said, and even Jerry Corsi admits something I learned years ago, and that is no matter who sits in that White House, no matter who wins amongst the so-called front runners, we, the American people, will lose on that day, on Election Day. There's no question. We lose because we are given the worst possible choices, and candidates with the worst amount or the greatest amount of political baggage that you could possibly imagine. I mean, McCain is anything but a stellar, angelic candidate. Now you say, well, who is? Well, that's certainly true, but you compare a John McCain with someone of the caliber of a Ron Paul, and that is what upsets the media moguls so much, is the fact that they have to go back 20 years ago to something Ron Paul said that they might pick apart and say, that sounds kind of racist to us, or kind of un-American, doesn't it? And that proves that, yes, he is head and shoulders above all the rest, the fact that he has been consistent. He doesn't really flip-flop. Now, occasionally he updates his views to reflect the changing situation, but he doesn't change the basic premise of government, you know, or of his philosophy. He adapts to the changing times and what's happening to our country today with the border, for instance. And he, you know, rightfully took John McCain to task for that. And I don't see him as pandering. I see him as maintaining his position of America first. He realizes we must have a secure border. He's against the NAFTA superhighway and SPP and NAU, the North American Union, for instance. He's opposed to all of that, and he always has been. He's been an America firster, and that's why you take a McCain who really and truthfully has always been for himself and has always thought of himself first, not his constituents, has always thought of serving the masters, just as Hillary and Bill have, the globalist agenda, the people that run things, the Zionists, you see, the one-worlders. So these men will be heralded as great achievers, and women like Hillary, and good, respectable, kosher-approved, anointed candidates, you know. And whereas Ron Paul, you know, he's just the people's candidate, that's all. He doesn't count because the people don't count. It's we who make the people think that their electability and their electioneering counts that are in control of these candidates. And we make kingmakers, and we break them. We make them, and we break them, as they did with Jimmy Carter. And you remember that era, I'm sure, Don, when Jimmy Carter, you know, was this, again, a man from obscurity, like Obama, for instance, relative obscurity. And all of a sudden, he becomes the candidate that everyone can rally behind. And I remember those days well. Those were my college years, you know?
Yes.
I remember all the propaganda. Jimmy Carter was going to be another breath of fresh air, and he was going to rein in the excesses of all that had happened before him. Nixon and Watergate and Ford and, excuse me, so on and so forth. Well, he admitted, if you see a Cyrus Vance as Secretary of State, when I come into office, and someone like Zbigniew Brzezinski as National Security Advisor, you will know I failed the American people. And those were the two people that he appointed post-haste, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Right there. I mean, we're being told, and Jimmy Carter did do some good by telling us he failed the American public. But he didn't fail his masters. He served their purpose. And when they were done with him, they ratcheted up the interest rates through the roof, and Jimmy Carter took the blame, although Carter had very little, if anything, to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
They did the same thing with Bill Clinton in reverse, didn't they?
Yes. Now, you brought up a very interesting point tonight. It actually I laughed, and I think Jerome Corsi laughed, too. You said that McCain comes basically with a train, more than a train load of baggage, is what I think you said.
Yeah, and absolutely.
And he agreed. And, you know, these Vietnam vets that are coming out, specifically some who were in the Hanoi Hilton, and remarked about how often he was not there. And there's quite a bit of information coming out. I've been doing some research, and I've been in touch with other researchers who are really looking into this seriously. And we've come to learn these are not just rumors. Evidently, there's even a film somewhere where he has been filmed cavorting with a Vietnamese general, getting in and out of limousines, going to restaurants, having an apartment, and being serviced by two prostitutes.
Uh-huh.
Now, Hillary Clinton is no saint herself, and she's deeply involved in this massive giga embezzlement that's going on in Washington and through the central banks. And we are about to see all of this stuff that everyone is having a hard time grasping crash down upon us, and it has to do with the oil and the banking interests on an international scale.
Mm-hmm.
And we may see a miracle yet. I'm not giving up any hope for some miraculous event to occur where all this comes to light. Now, they're doing their best to hide it, and they do that through the media. And, of course, you know, I encourage people to pray about this. And you and I have talked on past shows about the concept of repentance and the fact that, you know, this is such a serious problem. We have nowhere else to turn but to God.
That's right.
I hold the faith that these facts, and you know, again, I'm repeating something that your listeners tonight are not familiar with if they didn't hear your show, but you handled it so brilliantly. The two of you, really, anyone who would have been listening to your show would understand the game that's going on. And that's what we try to do, is to clarify the picture a little bit. You know, it's sort of like a misty, foggy mirror, you know, and we've got that dry towel that we can wipe it off and bring a clear image back.
Yes.
And they're constantly blowing, you know, trying to fog the mirror up so that we can't really see what's going on. Forget about the Alice in Wonder looking glass. We're just talking about basic reflection here. The situation we're involved in, we've got a corrupt election. It's obviously corrupt. I mean, there's vote fixing going on through these Diebold machines and the company that's doing the recount, particularly in New Hampshire, and I've been following that through emails from Albert Howard. I've been even posting him on my website.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like people aren't aware, but it's almost like everybody needs a kick in the rear end or something to wake up and realize what's going on. People are just so apathetic. And you know, what are your thoughts on that and getting people to awaken, if that's even possible?
You know what it is? We say people, Don, but what people are we really trying to awake? We're trying to really awake the majority of Americans to what's going on, because we feel that in numbers the majority can change things. But in reality, over historical ages, you know, it's always been the hardcore minority that has changed things for good or for evil, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you think about it, the war for independence and liberty was really, in terms of numbers, a small amount of people. Most people then were doing the same thing they're doing now. And as you know, many of the people were very comfortable living under the British crown. And many people were very comfortable living that kind of life and that form of government. And they didn't want to rock the boat. And today, it's the same thing. By contrast, for evil, look at the handful of people that orchestrated the Bolshevik Revolution. A minority of the people managed to liquidate vast numbers of people, Christian people, at the hands of these evil doers, you see? So I believe that regardless of waking up the people, so to speak, getting people motivated to do right, I've always said they have to want what's right first before they can get it right. And if they want a full belly and a full paycheck, and they don't care how they get it, and they don't care if it means arming Red China and using slave labor to help their lives become a little more cheap, if you will, or less costly, and they don't care about little babies being killed in the womb, and they don't care about the sodomites and the sodomy that's raging across our nation today, and they don't really care about anything but what's right for them, then the ball game is over. I mean, the war is over, because that cannot save a nation. It has to be knowing and doing what's right, period. And those things are not right. As far as I'm concerned, they have to stand up for Jesus, and they have to stand up for his truth. Whether they're Christians or not, doesn't matter. They have to do the right thing. And people today have lost their moral compass. They don't know right from wrong, or are not willing to take a stand based on right and wrong. And that's why we have these evil wars. Mm-hmm. Always in the name of fighting another dictator, always in the name of democracy, as you know, since Wilson's time and the rest of that crowd, and the people have unfortunately sent their children off to war across oceans, and that has resulted in tragedy. As a result, we have paid the price morally. We're reaping what we've sown, I believe, Don.
Well, I guess I should be a bit more explicit. I guess I'm talking about those that know what's going on. You know.
Well, that's a different thing. Yeah.
We hear these people. You know, they phone into the talk shows and they share their research and they email the news articles and they're Googling all the different terms that are being used and finding the films, or they're actually uploading the films themselves, and yet it seems to just stop right there. You know what I'm saying? That we're not taking enough of a proactive approach to this whole thing. Maybe it just boils down to prayer. You know, ultimately.
Well, yeah, and repentance, and you know, those things have to be done. But in and of themselves, I don't know. I firmly wonder whether or not, you know, we as a nation have been found wanting. You know, we're like the king Nebuchadnezzar, was it, weighed in the balance and found wanting. And as a people, our nation has passed that point where people really and truthfully believe what they say they believe. And even the so-called Christians, the people you're talking about, our people here, you know, the patriots and so forth, I think they too, and you know, all of us have compromised to a certain extent, and we're not steadfast the way we should be. We're not as devoted, maybe, as the way we should be to the truth. And maybe we've let a lot of, I don't know, a lot of laziness set in, and a lot of recalcitrance, maybe, and have just said, let the other fella do it. You know, the old story, let Joe take care of it. He'll do it, you know? I don't have to do anything. And the people just pray all day long and rock back and forth waiting for the rapture, you know? And they think that's yeah, all they have to do, you know? So beyond that, I don't really know, quite honestly, that anything can be done more than what we've been doing outside of armed resistance. And I think that day will come when, if we know the voting machines can't be trusted, and we know that the jury box will fail, then the only final box is, you know what, Don, the cartridge box. And that's what the Founding Fathers said. That's what they said. When it becomes so burdensome that this government no longer serves the ends of liberty, we have not only a reason to do so, but we have an obligation to alter or abolish that form of government, right? And I think we're at that point now. I don't see we can go on much longer, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, I've heard some of the financial experts recommending that people invest in gold or they invest in silver. And I've heard some rather perceptive callers say invest in metal is going to be in lead. So,
yes, that's right.
It's all inevitable.
Yep.
Yes, it's all in the perspective, I guess, of each individual.
Well, I mean, it's not that people want to do that and feel that they the first thing they should go out and do is pick up a gun and start shooting, because that's what they would like. But, you know, on the other hand, we have to realize that going back in history, the same thing happened with the colonies. They tried to mediate and negotiate with Mother England, didn't they?
Yes.
And they tried to find a compromise and say, give us this and give us freedom, and the king wouldn't budge, wouldn't do it, you know? And so they said, you've left us no alternative. When they came to Lexington and Concord to get the guns, what did they do? They had to fight back for their liberty and their freedom.
And it was a very small percentage of the populace that was actually involved in that fighting, too, even back then.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
They made it sound as if it was happening everywhere, you know. That's the one secret they kept from us.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's different today with all of the communications and so forth. It's much more difficult in one way, and yet in another way, it's much easier for people to link up as well, you see.
Yes. Recently, you had Dr. K on your show.
Yes.
And
he's going to be on your show, right?
Yes, he's going to be on next Wednesday. I'm excited about that, and I want to thank you personally for opening that door. His information is astounding, and what is really exciting to me, because there are very few people with that much expertise talking about this in a conversational way. And, you know, of course, we're talking about 9/11 and the research he's done on the hijackers themselves and who's behind the scene in Israel. Definitely he's pointed out that Israel is involved. And I heard him even use a name that I have used on a few shows. I think even your name, I mentioned Frank Lowy. Everyone mentions Larry Silverstein. He was the front man for this whole thing.
Yeah.
But with the amount of evidence that's coming out, and should we be fortunate enough to have some miracle take place, can you foresee a reopening of that investigation? And I don't mean by a commission, a presidentially appointed commission. Commissions cover everything up, and they avoid the law through these commissions. We know that. Can you foresee something ever happening that will eventually, right this wrong that's been done to the American people?
That's a good question, Don, as you are certainly known to do, ask good questions. That would depend. That would depend on the public, first of all, getting into that mindset again that they were on right after the first 9/11, and you know what happened. You know, everybody was so attentive. They were all good Americans, and you know, you just try to take a turn onto a street, and they would stop and let you go. Now they're right back to their usual antics. They're going through stop signs, red light. They have forgotten all about the so-called threat of 9/11. So right now, in their current mindset, no. There is no way, there is enough push, there is enough demand for anyone to really and truly conduct an impartial investigation into 9/11. However, if and when George Bush gets back to his old tricks this year, and we find another event more catastrophic, more major than anything we've seen at 9/11, I believe people are going to be looking right to Washington for answers, if in fact that is what happened. And they are going to demand that heads will roll because they realize at that point that we have left our borders deliberately unprotected, allowing these would-be terrorists to come into our country without sealing the border, while at the same time, as Dr. Corsi admitted, demanding that you and I give up our liberties. They're scratching their wooden heads now, saying, how is that possible? But if there, in fact, is another 9/11, I believe the gig could be up for them. The gig could be up. The American people, as a whole, will be very, very angry at Washington. And I think it's time due. Don't you think so, Don? I believe that time will have come.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I have not forgotten that, and I bring it up from time to time, especially during my rants. It's part of the unending cycle. I refer to it as a merry-go-round or a Ferris wheel that just keeps going round and round and round. And as soon as something is about to break, something even more controversial, more damning to their cause, they seem to come up with another monarch-inspired event, and I'm speaking about the monarch program, you know, where they have these shootings taking place in the colleges like Virginia Tech or in the Columbine-type high schools. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so obvious something that happened a couple of months ago when Bush went to Lincoln, Nebraska, and just by happenstance, there was a madman shooting up people in a mall, as if this is somehow supposed to create a sense of danger and provoke sympathy for the president, because this is occurring while he's in the town.
Mm-hmm.
It reeks of their fingerprints and their DNA all over the scene. If you understand my meaning.
Of course, yeah. Anything is. I don't put anything past this government and these people. I don't put anything past them. They are murderers, and they are killers, and they have proven they will stop at nothing to accomplish their evil deeds.
Yes, yes, I'm inclined to agree with you. Now, well, we covered 9/11 sort of like trying to wake up a dead horse in some ways.
Thing is, people are complacent now, aren't they?
Yes.
And people now are concerned not about terror or war. They're concerned about losing their jobs. Well, isn't that lovely? Well, hey, we've been saying this now for many years, telling them you'd better get ready because that's what's going to happen to you. An economic tsunami, 9/11, whatever you want to call it, is going to happen. And they planned it this way. Not by accident that the economy is sick. It is by design. Clearly,
yes.
By design.
Yes, I agree with you there. Now, there have been some current events that have gotten very little publicity, again, thanks to the mainstream media. And one of these events was a quick report that came out on CNN referring to the accidental cutting of the oceanic internet cables connecting the Middle East countries together. And I understand now that they've determined that 8 to 9 of these have been cut. And obviously the finger now is pointed at the U.S. Navy and maybe some Navy SEALs or whoever they use to carry out these dastardly deeds. But there was obviously an attempt to sabotage the communications between Saudi Arabia and Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And what did Iran turn around and do? Well, they said, you know, they're going to have their own Iranian oil bourse and that they're going to drop using the dollar as a form of currency. This has been going on. I sounded this alarm back last September and October that this was going to occur. And everybody told me, you know, without literally using the term, you're nuts. They beat around the bush, no pun intended,
yeah.
And were implying that I was nuts, that it was insane to think that this was going to happen. Well, the Chinese had removed $32 trillion worth of chips, the clearinghouse interbank payment system that guarantees the loans anywhere from $100 million and up. And these were the loans that our government was using. They were receiving about 4% against that money. So China was making out like bandits on that arrangement. And the Chinese determined that they were going to stop using the dollar, and they began at that moment paying for oil in British pound sterling. So we didn't hear anything about that in the mainstream media. That was coming from author, publisher Christopher Story. And it was happening in real time. He was letting us know over here. Because the banking scandals were going on. Now we hear there have been over 6,000 arrests worldwide, and it's a revolving door in these banks. People are now coming to their senses, realizing they're going to go to jail if they hide the information about all of this embezzlement which has been going on, and we're talking about the hypothecated funding of derivatives and hedge funds in New York. The money's just disappearing. People have put $5 million into these accounts expecting a 500% return in a couple of months. The money's gone. They've stolen the money. Mm-hmm. And it's being blamed now on a vanilla trader from France. And they're claiming that the $7 billion of accounts that he managed are the reason for this big implosion of the world's economic infrastructure.
Yes, he's the scapegoat, absolutely.
But then they've also been able to track $700 billion in actual losses attributed to his bosses and the people who he works for. So, you know, they've got their Lee Harvey Oswald in the financial community as well. They're going to blame this poor little French stockbroker on all of the theft and thievery that's been going on, not to mention the murder that's been going on along with it. You could not write a script and sell it to a Hollywood film production company or a major studio. They would say this is preposterous, yet this is actually what's going on. And I'm interested in your take on things in general in the financial community. Keeping in mind it's a fiat system and a usury credit system.
Well, I like to read each and every edition of Bob Chapman's reports, the international forecaster, as you know. And he just this week, yesterday, issued his midweek report. And as a matter of fact, he has some rather powerful things to say about exactly what you're talking about for the, you know, the 13th of the month. And he's talking about this cartel, this, if you will, financial cartel, as sociopathic denizens that control many diabolical components, including Wall Street, the Fed, corporate America, and our corrupt, beyond belief government. Yes, he has a few things to say about it and where it's leading. Now, the only thing I would differ with Bob Chapman on, and I've said so to him on the program, is yes, everything is collapsing, even for them. He believes it's out of their control to some extent. But I believe that is exactly what they have planned right from the beginning. They plan not only years in advance, but even centuries in advance. As you know, with the Rothschild family planning the destruction of Russia, with their Bolshevik Jewish armies moving from within, a handful of people moving to create a bloody revolution. And this is what they did. So this financial mess, they knew they would create eventually the same mess in each of the countries of the world, with their currencies beginning to fail. And all of this paper aristocracy will fail and then give way to a totally new one-world unified system, won't it, huh? Isn't that convenient? Well, that's what they've been telling us, isn't it?
Yes, yes, and they're expecting us to be so weakened by all of this that we'll thank them, you know, for saving us.
Oh, we will. Oh, the prophecies of the scriptures say that. Line right up. The government, the world government, will take care of everything. You've got debts, we'll pay them for you. You've got these financial burdens, we'll take care of that. You're out of work, don't worry. We'll take care of that too. Just surrender your soul to this beast system. Just give us your soul, and we'll give you that mark of Cain. And that will take care of your problems. That's what they're going to tell us in the future. That's where we're headed. And this collapse is not an accident. And as goes America, goes the whole world into this worldwide economic debacle and depression, I believe. That's what I'm thinking about. My own personal view, Don.
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm inclined to agree with you. In fact, I'm glad you mentioned Bob Chapman. Even Christopher Story, in his piece last, it was early yesterday morning. He's up all night sometimes putting all this stuff together. He referred to Bob Chapman's financial forecaster or the international forecaster, and I think. Probably you and I agree with Christopher, although, you know, I'm not sure how familiar you are on a day-to-day basis with all of that. I've kept up with it because I've taken a stance, you know. I've been sort of the American voice.
I haven't as well as you have, no.
You know, I think some of the guys in the financial industry have also their own behinds to take care of too, because they're in that business and they've got to operate in that business and they've got to maintain a certain profile, for lack of a better word, or a persona, so that they don't turn the very people off, you know, who are their clients. You and I may not have that same interest, and we're just after the truth, so we're going to dig up, you know, every rock and look underneath and see what's really hiding under there.
Well, you see, here's the point I'm trying to make, Don, and that is that this system of illegitimate money or fiat money, which came out of the 17th, 18th century, actually, you know, is all part of a corruption of a people, because we know in the scriptures real money is gold and silver, right?
Yes.
And what they've done is take the gold and the silver and given us paper. And you can't run an honest banking system with that kind of control and that debauchery of the currency. So it eventually must be destroyed. And it was designed to fail, inevitably. And no nation that I know of on that system has ever lasted 100 years. And here we are, 1913, coming up, Not too far from now, to 2013, I see everything that they have created turning to rubble, just as the Bible says. You see, you reap what you sow. You reap a corrupt money system, you sow a corrupt money system, I mean, then you reap it on the other end, which is the destruction of all the wealth that you've accumulated. So, at that point, I see Satan himself and his legions, this beast system, the false prophet and the man of sin, coming into play and offering a salvation for all of these woes, all of these problems worldwide, and he will sit in Jerusalem. He will occupy Jerusalem as his city of total control. That's what I believe we're going to see happen. I think so.
Yes. Well, this finance system that you're speaking about, and for those that are new to the Federal Reserve, you know, we have a foreign institution, a foreign corporation, if you want to call it that, that is not American, that has nothing to do with our nation, except they are extorting money from our nation,
mm-hmm.
or blackmailing our nation into poverty. They create the money out of thin air. Do you think it's a coincidence that Satan is sometimes referred to in the Bible as the prince of the power and the air?
No. Everything that's in this world is his. God has allowed him to rule the world for 6,000 years, and we are seeing that absolutely in evidence today. It's not God's money system. It's not God's economy, because his isn't corrupt. But this satanic system is corrupt, and it must be destroyed by its own inherent destructibility. And therefore, that leads to a new world order, so that the old order and all of the institutions with it can also be destroyed and amalgamated then into a new world system. You see, that is exactly what their enterprise is, right on the dollar bill, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's exactly what I believe the scriptures are telling us to watch for in the latter days.
Well, they put it in Latin, too, didn't they? And, and what is the one institution that still uses Latin in their services?
Let me think. I know there are quite a few Catholics, although it's pretty, you know, today it's pretty uncommon to hear it. Unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your point of view, you know?
Yes.
And
well,
the church, you know, you point something out, the Catholic Church and the Zionists are actually one, the hierarchy of the church. And
yes.
they are moving to basically transfer the Vatican to Jerusalem, as a matter of fact, in the
Yeah, it's not coincidental that you mention that. In fact, there are no coincidences. Have you seen any pictures of the Israeli Supreme Court building? It was the construction and the design of that building was handled by the Rothschild family, which I found to be interesting. And that is intended eventually to be a world court.
Yes. That's absolutely correct. All of these laws that have been passed, the global anti-Semitism law, the State Department, the Attorney General's office, all of them now making it a crime in many countries to even criticize Zionism or Israel and brandishing it as a hate crime. If you have a crime, then you have to have a trial, I suppose, don't you?
Yes. Now, in the land of the free, where we are criticizing our government, under the freedom of speech laws, and our First Amendment right, do you find it interesting that is it Senators McCain and Kennedy that are trying to pass a bill, maybe I'm mistaken? It might be McCain and Feingold, but
well, they already that was done a few years back now, 2000, that had to do with the campaign finance and free speech and what you could and could not say in a campaign. And yes, that was highly restrictive of free speech rights. And, you know, when you get somebody like a Rush Limbaugh, that's concerned about McCain's role in that, then you know there's something here that meets the eye that is out of the ordinary ballpark. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it's more here than meets the eye. And yes, McCain will do. McCain is a guy who will do whatever his puppet masters tell him to do. And when Ted Kennedy does the same thing, we expect it from what happened at Chappaquiddick and elsewhere. They have dossiers on people of things that have never come out. So that McCain has a lot of those skeletons in his closet you referred to obliquely tonight, and so does Hillary. I'm sure that Obama has indiscretions and things in his past that they certainly are aware of, and there's no question they're open to control because of that. McCain, definitely on the McCain-Feingold bill, which, of course, to say, passed almost a decade ago, and it doesn't end there. It's the amnesty proposal for illegals. And his pro-gun control, anti-Second Amendment efforts, abortion, all of this, you know, is just part of the parcel of what he stands for. He stands for whatever his masters tell him he should stand for. He hasn't got an honest bone in his body. And that's why he's running for president. And that's why he'd make a good president, I suppose, right? By those standards.
What is the name of the bill that I'm thinking of? I guess it's, you know, it's to stop, let's say, shows like this from
Oh, that's the Senate 1959 bill that sets up the commission, the homegrown terrorist bill. Yes, that's the one you're referring to.
Okay, and that mirrors what you just described about Israel. It's the same law, basically. So that kind of tells you who's behind it.
No doubt about it. They want to, you know, the Abe Foxmans, the ADL types, Southern Poverty Law Foundation, all of them are moving in that direction to control people's minds, and they'll have to do it in order to have this beast system. They have to have everybody under their control, and they have to enforce laws aimed at curtailing criticism of them so that people cannot criticize them without being tried as criminals, as haters. Haters. Hate speech will become officially a crime worldwide. That's what they want.
Well, we'll just have to call it something else. We'll call it happy speech, and we'll just tell jokes.
Well, anyway, I know you're probably running out of time, and I think we've had a good show, haven't we, huh?
Oh, we have. Rick, it's always a pleasure, and there's so many more things I want to talk about, but we're short on time here.
Sure. And we'll have you back on our show on Republic as well now.
Well, I would be happy to do that, and of course, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you to come back here again, and
I will.
And maybe we can follow a path that you predetermine, because I know there are some things that you like to talk about, and we kind of left this open a little bit so the new listening audience, Adams, can get a feel for, you know, how well-rounded you are in all these different areas, and we can be specific about some things.
Sure.
So I'm going to invite you back.
I will be back, Lord willing. And I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not the Terminator, but I'll be back. Yes.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for staying up so late. As I mentioned earlier, you had a broadcast roughly an hour before you came on here, and people don't really realize it, but we spend most of our day preparing for the shorts on the air so that we know what we're talking about, and we can make some kind of a heartfelt decision about, you know, how the Spirit is leading us and what we should be really bringing to the table, so to speak. So
that's true. Thank you for the opportunity again.
Well, thank you for being on the show, and I look forward to the next time. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. Our special guest tonight was Rick Adams. He will still be Rick Adams tomorrow, and I encourage anyone that is interested in hearing his show, you can tune in to republicbroadcasting.org. He comes on at 11 Eastern time, and he's always got some interesting guests. Of course, then you have to make up for that and come back and listen to the archives on BBS Radio. Rick's archives will be up as soon as Seth gets them posted. If you want to tell your friends, by all means, check out the website and become a subscriber to our archives. Also, pay my website a visit, directlightproductions.com. I've got my articles, some podcasts, music, videos, all kinds of interesting things there. You can spend quite a bit of time there reading up on current events and research many of the topics that we discussed tonight. Thank you so much for being with us, and I'll see you all tomorrow night when our guest will be Jim Murray. Got some great, great shows coming up the next 2 weeks. You're going to want to stay tuned. In the meantime, peace, love, and light, and I'll see you all tomorrow night. Good night.
Good night, Don.
Good night, Rick.
Thank you. Bless you.
My pleasure. You too.
We'll have you on the show, too.
All right.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.